Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Guys, I meant to do this Tuesday, but I have one thing to say to you guys.
Uh-oh.
Always blue.
Oh, my gosh. I found the little toy.
Always blue.
Always blue. Surprisingly, incredibly cheap. The kids actually love it. And I didn't know how to search for it. And it was like, kids toy, baby toy. I'm like, really? Apparently, that's what it is. So
you got to give us the background now, Tommy. This is a good intro. So why is always blue a thing? And why are we raving about this toy that you just recently picked up off the internet?
So we were at the MVP Summit all last week.
Yep.
Incredible time in Seattle, getting to meet. I don't know how many times I said, I love your articles. It's nice to finally meet you to someone. And
this is your first time to the MVP Summit, right, Tommy?
This is my first MVP Summit in person.
Awesome.
So we stayed with Formu Gilbert and Daniel Marsh-Patrick from Vega or Deneb, and the three of us. So that was a house for 6 days.
So Microsoft doesn't pay for your housing, just to be clear. Microsoft doesn't pay for housing when you go to these things. So what we had to do is we say, hey, we'll just get an Airbnb and we'll just kind of all have a place to stay. So that's kind of why we were able to formulate a little group of MVPs who went to the conference. So we all carpooled together. Seth drove us in his nice little car. And then it was super fun. But in the evenings, go ahead, Tommy. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there.
No, this is great. All day, jam-packed sessions in with the conference, but in the evenings, either after dinner, I think probably by Wednesday or Thursday, all of us were just done. They've been full days, and it's like we just all needed to chill. And I think someone was talking about a show. I know I mentioned the first day I was on, went to the Microsoft campus, like, oh, this is where they get the idea of the show Silicon Valley from. That and Google, and I remember not as bad. Apparently, Google's a lot worse. We were just talking about that. I'm like, we should watch it. And let's just watch an episode because I think some people haven't seen it. Or I think Gil and Daniel definitely saw it. We had some fun. And we basically powered our, we went through all of the first season in like 2 days.
Yeah, we would get home to the house. We would have some snacks. Seth would cut up some cheese and eat things and make little platters. And we'd sit there drinking wine and watching Silicon Valley. And there's a scene inside it where they have all the guys sitting around and someone has this little kinetic toy that you throw in the air and it kind of changes colors as you throw it in the air. And they kept yelling blue because it has blue and green on it.
Yeah, because if I throw this up, it either goes to green or blue.
Yeah, and when you catch it again, it turns into like it solidifies into a color.
Yeah.
And so everyone was yelling, always blue, always blue. Because they kept throwing it in the air and it kept turning blue.
Chant.
Just a chant. So then the rest of the week, it was kind of like whenever we would get out of the car or we'd move between buildings, it was like, always blue, always blue. Anyways. Yeah.
But I mean, just one of those memories. It's one of the perfect memories from a conference. You know, that's when you know you have a great time a week away. But no, it's been finding its value. And it's also a marvel of innovation, actually. I have no idea how to do this.
There we go. Tommy marvels at simple things. This is the episode for today.
Is it?
Our main topic for today is going to be around data quality. So as in typical amazing fashion, Data Goblins pulls out an incredible article. So we're going to be reviewing the Data Goblins Power BI quality. I think the name of the article is The Quality Problem. That's what we're going to talk to. Before we do that, any other announcements before we want to jump in or any news items? All right. I don't think we have anything else on the docket here. The other thing I will say is next week, I believe, is the Microsoft FabCon, I think is what they're calling it. Fabric Conference, I believe is the name of the conference. And everyone's invited to go. So you are invited to join us at the conference. I'll be there. The conference, if you want to go get tickets, it's azuredataconf.com. It starts next week. I think you can still get tickets, I believe. But if you want to get $100 off, you can use Carlo100 to get tickets off of the event. It's in Las Vegas. So go visit azuredataconf.com and you can go check out the conference. happy to see you there. Make sure you say hi if you actually do attend. All right, let's jump into our main topic here, the quality problem. Great article. I'll put the link here in the chat window just in case anyone wants to kind of peruse the article as we get going here. But very well written, as always. Lots of great things to consider here. There's a couple acronyms that are presented in here. Some talking around data ops, which I think is a very needed topic to talk about more. I don't really feel like there's a lot of data ops type solutions today currently for Tabular models at this point, but it seems like it's going to become more of a topic. And then also this acronym that is the Reaper acronym, reliable, efficient, automated, polished, easy to use, and robust, or thinking about data quality. All right, jumping in. What are your initial thoughts? Go for this. Or Tommy.
Honestly, at first, I'm going to say I'm upset at Kurt. Because
you're upset.
You're having a fight.
So let's just precursor. Kurt is probably one of our favorite guys to you know, review an article or you know, talk about what he's thrown out into the community.
The man is writing blogs on Tabular Editor 3, and he did the course and things. He's writing documentation for Microsoft,
and he's listening.
What
do you want to say to Kurt? What do you?
Yeah, he's listening right now. Go ahead.
How?
Come on, he's in the room, Tommy.
Yeah, no, I how
what?
How is he doing it all?
You're upset because he's putting out all this content.
He's got his hand in everything. It's awesome though, because I honestly, all the articles he does, and this is one that I don't think about in terms of the priority on something we have to implement, or this is going to be part of our implementation planning that's going to be high on the list. Like, we always talk about data quality, but Mike, to your point, there's not really any set way. I mean, we've had some conversations on it, but they're not exactly tied to Tabular models. They're usually database data quality. It's very old school. It's like getting your computer right, but you're working on Windows DOS. It doesn't work for the infrastructure that we have now. So I love that not just there's an article out there, but how in-depth this is, because like, where can we start as business intelligence teams, from whether it's a small or enterprise, in terms of getting started on a process and a methodology to say, hey, we're going to evaluate and see how successful we are on our data quality issues. So I love this article, and I'm glad that it's something that maybe we talk about more.
So I guess where my mind initially went on this article was, I was looking at the article, and I thought, I read through it, I'm thinking to myself, how does this relate to organizations, and what kind of data quality things that are popping out from different teams across the company? And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm thinking about this, going, you know, I've had a number of times where I'm working in data analytics. I'm being asked to produce some sort of numbers, and the boss comes down to a person or a team member and says, I need information about this. We're going to make decisions on things. And it feels like in some cases, sometimes these really large decisions are being made by trusting someone to go into the data, manipulate it, produce their analysis, and then kind of explain, have that user present the explanation of their data. Here's where we're at. Here's the analysis I went through. Here's where I got to the answers. And so I had a number of kind of like meetings where we're deep diving into challenges, why things were up, why things were down, trying to figure out unreason through the explanation. And we would put multiple team members on it, and potentially we'd bring in a black belt, and they would statistically walk through some stuff. I mean, we had some pretty detailed conversations around all this. But things that were not considered in those conversations was the quality of the data that was given to you. You kind of assumed, here's what is given. I don't know how to articulate this the right way. Leadership trusts certain people to do analytical things. They show up with a problem, you're given some data, and then you walk through the analysis and out pops the answer. And then everyone trusts it. That there's trust in it, someone's looked at it, and you move on. That should be no different when you're building a semantic model or other things. And so there's another trust thing here. And like, if it's coming out of these other automated systems, it feels like there's a bit less trust. I don't know. I'm not sure if this is actually a real thought or just maybe just random pieces I'm putting together here. But I also want to think about like where people are coming from. I think a lot of the Power BI space comes from business users who had to just figure out problems, solve them, use the data they had, and do the best with what they had been given to them. I'm not necessarily sure that's the first thing you think of when you do that is quality. How do I know this is quality data? How do I know that I didn't screw up an Excel file formula? I think it's just an accepted way of doing business to some degree. And maybe now what we're seeing is, you know, the introduction of data ops, these other concepts, that seems a bit more of an IT-centric way of thinking.
You're poking on something here. So, and I want to lean into what you said, right? Because businesses, everybody in business is operating, you know, on this this wavelength that trust is, you know, all the reporting done is, you know, manually is trustworthy, and mm-hmm. this is how we're making decisions. And then all of a sudden, when we get over to reporting, it can be scrutinized, right? It's sure. And if there are trust problems, then we have a big deal. I'm going to challenge that idea, because what I see is that more often than not, when anyone in the business is manually putting together numbers, innate trust is given to that person and the numbers because nobody can validate it.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, I've seen also like being part of those processes. One, you realize a ton of them are, hey, we were doing this matching exercise and only 60% of the matches, you know, that we found, and now that is 100% of our conversation. So everybody uh-huh. assumes that that's in totality all of the information that we need. And it's not. You only have 60% of it. And whatever actions we're taking are only on 60% of that, but nobody downstream knows. And I think that's the value, though, of data not manipulated like by a person or one-off, whatever, is understood, like transforms understood full data sets that can validate the reports that are put out there. And that's what teams of people that are using reporting tools uh-huh. can do, where it's not behind the scenes. And what I do want to say is Kurt is probably one of the most polished and well-written writers of articles out there, and very comprehensive. In this one, I swear, I pick up like a lot of frustration in parts of the article, but it's still well-polished, still well-written, but just on the edges, all of a sudden I was like, man, Kurt is really pissed off about some of this stuff, which as we talk about it, these are like, and I don't want to derail because eventually, like, he's got some great points, Mike, that you point out with Reaper and DevOps as far as like how we fix these things, but we could definitely wallow for the next, you know, 30 minutes on the frustrations that we have around different aspects of where this constant push towards give me something quick is where a lot of businesses live all the time, because you need the answer, you need the answer, you need the answer. So you can see how this is driving a culture of people are good enough, right? It's good enough metrics to get out the door. And that's not good enough for us. It shouldn't be. And I think the point of this article is we who have access to the tool sets that can teach people, that can, you know, build these foundations, have a responsibility to lean into quality. And that's where I love the full scope of this article. And everybody, you know, listening should go read it in detail, because we're only going to touch the periphery and the edges of this. Perfect. But it is so imperative. It's imperative for us to focus on quality as we go. And he outlines a bunch of different ways why driving for quickness and ignoring quality causes issues. And just the two that resonate off the top of head are, for me, were like that it automatically in some way, shape or form is going to drive dissatisfaction, whether that's in how you use the report or the data. But it is, it's a death by a thousand cuts. And believing that what, like developing a report is easy and uh-huh. it should be just fast. And it's not easy. Just because we have tool sets now that can produce a an insight for you quicker than we were, that doesn't mean that work isn't behind that, that we still need to do, right? It's like this, either you get it in 3 weeks when I do the full cycle of all of the work that's gonna live on, or I can give you something after a week and a half, but I still have a week and a half of work to do. So just some initial thoughts around like the article.
Man, and you're, you already got your tidbit in early this morning too. We're not even at 8:35.
Your audio just went really awful, wow. Tommy. Yeah, you got really robot-y. All right, well, we'll move on. Let you fix your audio there. So also another part of the article. So I liked the very beginning of the article where Kurt actually did say prioritizing quality is not the same as pursuing perfection. And I do think I've seen this a number of times where organizations get hung up on a couple things that mislead them a little bit in a direction, particularly around, okay, we have, you know, 10,000 records that don't match. We have missing data. Okay. Is that 10,000 records out of 50,000 records total? So like, you know, 20%, or is that 10,000 records out of a couple million? Right. So sometimes I think people also lose, like to your point, Seth, sometimes people get hung up on some of the details of things as opposed to, okay, you're missing some things. Sometimes perspective is required. Yeah. That we're missing some data or some things are not cleaned up 100%. Mm-hmm. Is that enough to really throw the needle one way direction or another? And sometimes the answer is no, but it really comes down to a matter of perspective. Sometimes we overemphasize things that are such, the impact is so meaningless, and the reality is it's just noise in the system. And so I think it's a good note here is when you're talking about quality, just remember it's not the same as perfection, and you have to evaluate how much time you feel like you really need in order to provide that high level of data quality. Because I've always said it's like a curve that never gets there, right? You can get closer to 100% data quality, but in doing that, you're going to spend more money. It corresponds.
Testing, rolling.
Yeah.
No, Tommy, it's still robot-y.
Man, Tommy's just going to be a pretty face if he doesn't fix his mic here. I think one of the points, he's got a ton of these cool drop downs that he does that dive into different areas. But before we focus on like the purpose of his article, there was one point I think in, I'm just trying to find it real quick. I think it's a battle plan, a battle to make a good plan. Yeah. His last bullet point really resonates, right? And he says, we battle to show an ROI when we focus on outputs instead of outcomes measured the right way, steering us to build things that don't help us achieve our objectives and advance progress to our goals. And this one, I think, resonates with me because we talk about a lot about OKRs, right? Companies having objectives. Uh-huh. And something all of us can point to, not only in, you know, where our work capacity is going towards solving the problem. And that's how the company says these are our biggest problems all the way down, you know, the pipeline. But and how important that is, because otherwise everybody's just like, this is the most important thing. This is the most important thing. And then,
yes.
And then reporting teams or people who can bring forth data insights are struggling with like, yeah, well, we gave you all that, but it didn't move any needle. And I don't know the answer to this question, right? I agree with the first part of this, where I still have a hard time myself understanding how do you articulate or track the value, the actual value of what we're building. Because the output being the report provides the meat that everybody feeds off of, right? To go make decisions,
mm-hmm.
right? It's an accelerator for the business, and huge things can happen out of just this output. And if there was a way for business intelligence teams, and maybe it's through usage, right? But like, think about, you know, the two big needles, right? Either you're making money or saving money, and reports can showcase a lot of those two different things, you know, to end users that through analysis, they find discoveries of, oh my gosh, we can save thousands and thousands of dollars here, or we're going to go make a $1 million deal because I can see that we can sell this person this and this and this and this. And it happens. Well, the value of what we created was a net, like multi-millions of dollars or multi-hundreds of thousands in savings in either direction. And man, that point just struck me, because when I can do that efficiently, that'll be my longest blog article ever.
Yeah. Agree on that one. All right, Tommy, let's do another mic check.
Hello, testing.
Nope. God. It's not working. It's still sounding grainy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds grainy.
A little grainy.
All right, Tommy, go restart your computer. We'll catch you back. See ya. All right, we'll let Tommy go restart his computer.
Look at that. Mike, it worked. We told him.
We got rid of him.
Yeah, just like that. Exited on this show. Mark it down. What was the day Tommy got kicked off the podcast? It was episode 304. I'm just kidding.
I do want to transition to another point here. So I really liked Kurt's diagram. So there's a lot of, one of the things that Kurt does very well in the article that I really enjoy is there's always like an infographic, a picture or something that depicts, and it's like multiple levels of depth that are going on here. So one of the images that he put out here that I thought was very useful, and I think is a great way of communicating one of the points here is, quality is always important. It's about a little bit more than halfway down the article, and it's a picture of a curve. It's a growing curve, kind of like an exponential curve going on here, and it's an x-axis and y-axis on a curve. The quality is on the y-axis, so higher quality data, and then across the x-axis is the importance in your decision making. Like, for example, what color shirt should I wear today? Probably not as important of a decision. But, deciding on how many more employees should we hire or let go, much more impactful to the business and long-term vision of the company, or what should we report out to our shareholders about revenue and investments in the company, right? Those decision points are extremely important and need to be very highly, data needs to be very high quality to support those decisions or support that analysis. So in the image, he has like, the prototype is like a triangle. The POC is like, four-sided diamond, and then it's like a pentagon and a hexagon, and then he kind of adds, so what he's doing is he's kind of adding more in this prototype thing. He's kind of saying, look, initially your data quality might not be very high as you're starting out the project or whatever the item is, but as you increasingly, if you add the importance, or if you have a higher important decision, meaning it has a higher importance at the end, you need great quality data to make those high important decisions. And I think this is just, again, a really well articulated visual where I saw multiple things happening, where I really liked the fact that he had a triangle going into like a circle by adding more quality to it. And the quality of that shape was increasing, eventually becoming a wheel that he could use on a cart. I just felt like the analogy there was very well done. I think, yeah, that is kind of true. You're adding more resolution, more validity to the quality of that data, so you can get really a full picture, and your initial designs of a process or project may not have very much quality in the beginning, but be mindful that if that project will eventually need to make smart decisions, then you need to spend time increasing the quality of the thing. And quality is, I don't think it's a destination. I think it's more of like I don't know how you would say it. It's not a destination. It's more like a direction on the compass, right? You align yourself to the direction and you head the direction. You may not ever get there, but at least you have to use Microsoft's term, you have the North Star you're trying to head towards, right? You know directionally where you're trying to get to.
I'm glad you pointed this out, because it reminds me of a very similar description that a very good, smart friend of mine laid out, and I didn't even notice this at first, Mike, so thanks for pointing it out, is the shape change, right?
Yeah.
From triangle to, square to rhombus, whatever.
A triangle would not work well as a wheel on a car. It just wouldn't.
I would actually change this visual to be like kind of a wave, a trough, right? And the reason is because, as it was described, this kind of scenario by my friend is, we get value out of prototypes and POCs and quick wins. And the reason is because we're actually on the downhill. We don't have anything, right? So it's like, hey, we can push this thing off the hill and actually get a little bit of value out of it. But all of a sudden, if it's still a triangle or a square, as you begin to plateau, right? And we're off that curve of like pushing this object down into the, you know, surface area of business value, mm-hmm. that object stops. It either stops or slows down, right? So if we're not creating the right type of object to move forward, what happens is when you want that object to be of higher quality or like have to start pushing it up at the other side of importance of or value to the business, you need it to be a circle. Otherwise, it's going to take longer and longer and longer to actually shape, you know, that object to the point where you can get it to the top. Does that make sense? So it's like you can push it off and it and you get a little value, but you can't push it far until it's in a form that allows you to climb the hill, which is the other side of things. Anyway, I don't know if it's like directly, you know, aligned with this, but it strikes me as like that object kind of change of like, no, there is value, but you're not doing a ton with it. And then all of a sudden when it accelerates, if it's left in that bad shape form, it's a huge pain to push it up.
If there's
no quality or like, it's fine if it's like the one person or two people that know about all the inefficiencies or deficiencies in the data, because they can still suss out some, you know, particular value from it.
Yeah.
But if you all of a sudden share it to 100 users, they don't know all that. Right. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden it's very disruptive. What do you have to go do to fix it? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of like that pivot or curve up, I think is where the tech debt or the things not built right or all of the skipping of things that happen start to become really, really visible. And he points that out later in the article where the analogy still aligns, certainly, because the breakdowns, the bugs, where does all your time go from feature development and innovation to bug fixing and upset people? It goes there really fast.
Yeah, I liked your analogy. I liked you when you were thinking about the tech debt, because a portion of data quality is a certain amount of tech debt that goes along with it as well. Mm-hmm. All right, Tommy is back on. Let's give another check here. Tommy, let's see if you can work here.
I think Microsoft knows.
Oh, it's working.
Hey, we're good. Tommy.
They've been controlling me. They know what I'm going to say.
Just went red body again.
And maybe
is your internet speed down?
No, wait. I have an idea.
No, I can't hear you.
Connections.
All right.
Anyway, so purpose, like we jumped down, I think, into the quality. I just want to reiterate the three points that he calls out as far as the purpose of the overall article. He wants to describe the elements of quality data solutions with the acronym REAPER. Mike, you already interjected that. Emphasize that quality is about more than just data. It's about both continuous end-to-end analytics. And I love this point because it leans into the point that we're not just talking about the technical artifact of the report that we're deploying, right? We're talking about the end-to-end. How does data come in? Where does it come from? Are we testing that? What is the output of that continuously? And that, I think, is somewhat different than a lot of other applications, because it's like it's going to behave this way with the things no matter what. And with data, like, you could have the full solution and then all of a sudden one day it completely breaks, right? Because there was a data piece. There was one value that didn't conform to something and it broke a relationship. We all know that one. And then to introduce data ops and how data ops can improve the overall quality.
So I wanted to dive in a little bit more here on data ops, because I think that data ops is a great concept to think about. Mm-hmm. Implementing it feels to me to be much harder to implement than just, you know, I get the gist of it, right? You know, let me give you some picture here, right? Working with some other MVPs, they have been doing some more things around data ops in general, but there's this concept of, okay, every time I deploy a data model, right? So I have different workspaces, I have a deployment pipeline, maybe I'm doing dev, test, and production. right? And so as I go through these different environments, I'm actually interested in making sure that any change I make to measures or loading of data, right? There's kind of two aspects of a model. If I change a measure or change the logic on how tables are being built, I could influence the data that's inside a table. And so you could also have an issue with the loading of data or where the data comes from in the source system. So when I look at this data ops process, I really like it because the idea of I make a model, I generate some tables that I know is should be consistent, and I should be able to deploy it to dev, test the data. Here's the same, and my analogy is like, look, I'm looking for monthly total sales, right? And I'm looking from January, or I pick a certain amount of months that I know the numbers are. And then the next time I do a deployment, I check those same numbers. The next time I do a deployment, I check those same numbers. So in the article, and this is something that I don't think many people understand or have heard before, there's this concept of a checksum. A checksum is basically aggregating a bunch of data together and getting like a single value that describes a lot of information. When you do software development, you would deploy an MSI file or deploy an executable for someone's computer. And what you would typically provide is a checksum of that, because that then says the binary, the bits have not been tampered with. And therefore, the file you got is the same checksum as the person who produced it. So this is the same kind of concept in data ops, where I can say, I will produce the same table at the end of every development cycle, and I will check the numbers to make sure the numbers are correct every single time. So, And Greg, you point out a great question here. Checksum is a feature that I found when I was inside the accounting world, finance world, does this all the time, and especially inside their Excel documents. So what they'll do is let's imagine you're bringing all the data in for an analysis, and you're trying to account for all the dollars. So you're splitting the money apart. You have a lot of grouping. There's a lot of, and so you're going to have this at the beginning of your process. You're going to count all the numbers and add a single total at the end. You're going to go through all the calculations, the splitting, the dividing, whatever you want to do. And at the end of the process, you add up all the numbers, and it should be still zero. So that way you have no issues with the data, and you can verify, okay, if the number is, you have a metered way, a single number to look at that says, yes, we are 100% on track for those numbers.
Yep, right on. So one of the, hi Tommy.
Tommy can't get any of his technology to work
right. This is not a great start to the day, but.
All right.
Yeah, it's a great start for me, but welcome back to the conversation.
Let Tommy say something on the podcast. Like, so there might be like another point there. Maybe Seth, you may react to that one, and we'll give Tommy his kind of final note here, because we're actually going to end here a little bit early for people on the podcast.
No, I agree with the checksum validation, and that's part of the data ops process, right? Where you can interject data quality checks or the automation around like, hey, I'm going to do a row count on this, or I'm going to look, he points out, I'm going to do like this sales value should be the same, you know, all the time for this month. And if it deviates, I got a problem and I got to go look at something. So I 100% agree with you. I think what I did want to lean into is his Reaper concept here is great, but the meaning behind it, right, is the R is reliable, related to like the data results. E is efficient, so good processes behind everything. A is for automated. P is for polished, around like organized, reusable objects or processes, easy to use, simple, E. And then R is handle new data changes. Be a robust solution that you're not having to constantly rebuild or recalc all the time. So all within that, there are a lot of dangers and things, but Tommy, any thoughts from you? I have one more section I want to point out, but you've been, you know, kind of dealing with your technology problems this morning. But
I've had so many things I wanted to say today.
You've got a little bit of time to say them, so think your thoughts and get them together. Let's do it.
So,
let's go.
So I'll be incredibly brief. The world we're living in right now is, I think, really changed because of Fabric. Because the elephant in the room is Power BI is not great for data quality checks. It's not made for it. It's an analytical solution because just how we actually look at data. Data quality does not work great when it comes when you're dealing with filter context. Usually working when it comes to static data, really from more in the line of data engineering, going through the workflow to iterate. Just like, what is it, Epic Journey or Incredible Journey, the tooling out there.
Great Expectations is the thing.
Great Expectations. Great Expectations.
Referring to.
Mm-hmm. Close enough. Yeah, and we've never had the tool. That, and the reason why I feel very confident saying that is because no one has really written about or provided any samples on data quality. When what I'm assuming you guys said is data quality is pretty important. And the fact that we don't have any resources, Microsoft has no documentation on that particular issue, Power BI wasn't made for that. But guess what? We can solve that in Fabric because it's more of a tooling, the way that actually the data is coming in. Power BI is made for, from the tabular point of view, which is difficult. So I think we're actually getting to a point now where hopefully we can get solutions utilizing Microsoft Fabric.
I really wish we had more time to talk because I don't agree with that at all.
Oh, I don't agree with it either. I mean, I understand your point, Tommy, but like, I understand where you're going from. But like, if you look at Power BI and you look at like any other tooling that we have, like what does Databricks give you that does data quality? Yeah, you have some things called assertions on tables that adds a little bit of data quality. You can kick out some bad data. What does SQL Server give you with data quality? I mean, there are some things in there, but like you have to build all this stuff kind of in every tool.
Yes, you have to build it.
But that's my point. My point is you're expecting Power BI just to do data quality.
No.
It doesn't. And the tooling is not going to ever give you, no tooling is ever going to give you like better improvements on data quality. Now, different tools potentially will supply you with checks and balances. And so, you know, we'll kick out bad data or we'll refuse bad data because of certain criteria we set up in front. Like I'm thinking like Dataverse. If you try to write data into a Dataverse table that has the wrong data type, it will say fail and it won't let you put it in there. So that is some, you know, very basic level of data quality. But to what we're talking about in this article, like being able to like run a test, like, and again, later in the article, it talks about, you know, it's data ops is data quality written as code. It's a code first lens of how you write a number of data quality. Now, I will agree with your point, Tommy, that Fabric does give us capability to now write code based solutions that can check things. But to anyone's point here, like it's none of this is developed. It's all still kind of whatever you want to do. And so it's really going to be a culture portion. This is a people and process thing. How do you prioritize quality and what do you do to make it happen? All right. Yeah. With that, any final thoughts? We probably should run through final thoughts here.
I have to be brief, which pains me because I think right at the end of the article, there's a 2, 4, 6, 5 different bullets that all fall under a header of so far these may all seem like obvious topics. We all know this, right? And yet quality is a problem in data and analytics that many teams struggle to address. And I want to stress that like every one of those bullets by teams struck me as something that isn't just data BI teams. It's data in general in organizations. So this like alludes, and the one example I'll have is an absence of standard in processes result in redundant effort, data, and code throughout the solution lifecycle. That's very true for us as we develop ETL solutions and reports, but it also happens in the business and with teams all the time. People are duplicating work. They're like,
all the time.
We have the thing that everybody is working on, but in slightly different ways. So there's a bunch of these different correlations that I had. The last point I'll make is this. Creating a data foundation is why, like, Kurt is writing this article, everything about it in terms of quality, because we're building the foundations that can last, that are trustworthy, that businesses can leverage and be confident in. What's terrifying to me is this is still a conversation, not terrifying. This is still a conversation and it's been a conversation for many, many years. And the cautionary thing that goes off in my mind is there is a buzzword called AI right now that every business is investing a lot of dollars into. And if you don't have a foundation, be ready to have conversations that you should really grok this article and talk about all of the things that have to be in place before you have anything really working well in an LLM or an AI, you know, generated model in the future, because it all starts with quality foundational data. You can't skip this one.
I like Kurt. Kurt likes your comment. You're right on target. I think I saw that come through in the comments. So, Tommy, any final thoughts on this article?
Honestly, to Seth's point, guess what AI runs on is data. I think hopefully we start seeing solutions. I think as Fabric really becomes more mainstream and there's more adoption, it's a perfect tool, again, to have the being able to write the test and be a lot more custom than we could be in a tool just like Power BI for just from a reporting or modeling point of view. We could check more upstream, because the last thing, my real final point is data quality is never a single day issue. It's a gradual climb of bad processes, bad input, and it happens slowly until you realize, man, my basement's much more messier than I thought.
But or it happens gradually. Work.
What?
Quality.
Yep. Quality.
Processes. Standardization. I said, or this your mic doesn't work.
Or yeah, or your mic doesn't work. So.
All right. With that, let's say thank you very much for listening today. This is a great article. I think this is really good. Data quality is definitely a problem we should all be thinking through. We really appreciate your listenership on this episode. We would love it for you to recommend this to somebody else if you found some value in the data quality conversation. It sounds like we need another topic around this one. We might have to come back and revisit this article after we get all our technical issues worked out here. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. And Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or really wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. We've had a ton of mailbags lately, but no names, and we've been using a lot of them, so we want to mention you. Join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m., or at least two of us, and join the conversation live on all Power BI Tips social media channels.
Awesome, and thank you very much. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.